Appeals this morning. We have three cases on our 9 o'clock docket set for oral submission. I think the first case is American Hat Company versus Wise Electric Cooperative. And if Megan will announce counsel and the time they have requested.
May it please the court, Mr. David Ferris arguing for appellant and Mr. Michael Choinsky arguing for appellate.
Thank you. Mr. Ferris?
May it please the court. Not since before I became a platinum blonde have I been so intimidated by the attorneys that are arrayed behind me today. You're going to obviously hear some arguments. I just hope they don't smirk too much during mine. I know the court has read the briefs and is acquainted with the facts, so rather than emphasize the facts that are in the record, I'm going to talk about some of those that aren't. This is a case about hats and hat bodies, 490,000 hats and hat bodies that were smoke destroyed as a consequence of a fire that undisputedly was caused by Wise Electric. I'm going to probably refer to them as hats. They're actually hats that were hat bodies that were quite valuable by the undisputed testimony, at least valuable at some point, became hats that, and then ultimately become hats that are finished because some retailer's label is actually put on the inside of the hats. This first occurred when Keith Maddox bought American Hat Company and moved it from Conroe, Texas to Bowie, Texas. Now, the record is not very precise about when all of this occurred. We do know that by early 2005, they were up and running in Wise County. But we do not know what inventory had been delivered by that time, and we do not know, and this is an important fact, we do not know when, if in fact it did, when American Hat rendered its inventory for tax purposes, and that will become, that's significant, you're I'm sure already aware why. Our first issue is the estoppel issue, and that's an intriguing issue. Both parties sort of want to talk about it. It seems to me Wise wants to have it both ways. I'm not going to address that issue. I have nothing else to add. And I really think our stronger issues are the remaining points, which would be remand rather than render points. And my sense is that this court would generally prefer to give lawyers another chance and parties another chance to try their lawsuit, and a remand would allow that. It's not an issue I'm waiving, however, because if this case goes any higher, it's an issue that I will certainly want in the case. Issue number two complains of the ruling of the trial court in admitting certain tax records. Now, the judge got it right the first time. First, he excluded those tax records, and then he let them in. And it absolutely devastated American Hat's case, and here's why. The jury, despite all the evidence that was way up here in figures, determined the loss of inventory to be $95,000. And how did they arrive at it? They could only get that figure from one source, and that was the testimony and the implication, and it was really no more than an implication, that the inventory had been rendered for no more than $200,000, that after the fire occurred, it was $95,000, and rather it was $110,000. And so, at the urging of Wise's counsel and jury in final argument, the jury just did the arithmetic: 200 minus 100, 105,000, I believe it is, and came up with a finding or a verdict of $95,000 as a lost inventory. This is despite testimony that all of these hats and hat bodies were worth at a minimum over $5 each. If they were all only worth the lowest end, it would be $2.5 million.
What is your explanation for those numbers?
For what numbers, Your Honor?
The 200 and 105.
Well, the jury took the what they I believe understood to be a rendition of $200,000.
No, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase my question. What is your explanation for submitting those numbers to the taxing authority evidence of the value?
Well, Your Honor, we don't know that they were actually submitted, but there are tax statutes that allow a cost basis on new property. New property is not defined. It was new to the client, surely. We also don't know what was actually physically in Wise County when the rendition occurred, and if there was a rendition, and the rendition could have occurred as early as September 1 of the year preceding the fire, almost 15 months prior to the fire occurring. So there's just a lot of things we don't know. And the objections, I think, that there was no, that first of all, that the tax records, the opinions expressed in the tax records were hearsay and not an exception under Rule 803, I think is a valid argument, and I'll stand by the authorities that are cited in our brief.
Well, the proponent of those numbers was not questioned about the source of them?
No, Your Honor. Well, no, I take that back. They asked, there were some questions, but if you look carefully at Mr. Maddox's testimony, he did say that he thought perhaps he had done it on a cost basis, and this was questioning by John Lively on redirect. But there was a little bit of back and forth and between Wise's counsel and Mr. Maddox, the owner of American Hat. And obviously, Mr. Maddox didn't know. He didn't understand the tax laws. He wasn't sure he had, in fact, rendered them. It was sort of suggested, well, did you maybe render them on a cost basis? And I think you can read from the testimony, it was, yeah, that was probably what we did. But they were entitled to do that. There's the tax code, section 2101, subparagraph 5, allows a rendition based on historical cost rather than market value as we understand it ordinarily in a jury charge.
Counsel, how do you respond to the argument that the testimony at trial was concerning replacement costs, not market value, and the charge asked the jury market value?
Your Honor, that's a good question that we did not address in our briefs. And the answer, I think, is that when you're valuing inventory, the value is a wholesale value. And the case for that is Needham Piano and Organ Company versus Hollingsworth. It's a very old case. It appears at 40 Southwest 787. Supreme Court opinion. It was last cited that I can find in a 1979 opinion, Dahlstrom Corporation versus Martin, 582 Southwest 2nd, 159 at 163, and last cited by this court in Shield versus Cartwright, 172 Southwest 2nd, 108, in 1943 opinion of this case that was affirmed later by the Supreme Court. And that's really what we've got. I mean, if the market value of inventory is its wholesale value, then what we've proved is the wholesale value, or we have proof of it. And the proof is that these hats were worth, given their condition at the time of the fire, anywhere from $5 and some change up to $137. So again, taking the low figure, that's well over $2.5 million for 490,000 hats and hat bodies, up to potentially, as there was testimony, up to over $13 million. Also, I think that I have raised a great weight and preponderance point in this case, and boy, those are always tough points to sell. They were tough points to sell years ago, and I know it hasn't changed. This is a good case, and here's why. In this case, the evidence and the charge do mesh because the proof of the wholesale value is what it is. And in this case, you can look and see where counsel for Wise Electric argued to the jury, do the arithmetic. Take what we are telling you the evidence is that it was $200,000 by their rendition, never actually proved, and that the tax authorities afterwards found it was worth only $105,000, and the inventory is only $95,000 loss, and that's what the jury bought, and that's absolutely inconsistent with all the evidence.
Was it undisputed as to the number of hats that were lost?
They did. They suggested that some of them weren't really that they could be repaired, and that was disputed. I think there was actually two witnesses who testified.
Well, the figures work out to about 50 cents a hat. Based on what the jury found, right?
41
Which
cents.
Which is not possible.
41 cents a hat. But there is evidence that there was some testimony that the hats could, that the smoke damage could be gotten rid of, the stench could have.
I thought the evidence was that it would be fraud.
Well, there was evidence that it would be fraud, and the witnesses called by Weist, when asked point blank, well, would those hats have any value? Well, they didn't know. They thought you could get the smoke damage away, but they didn't know if they'd have any value. And Your Honor, I think that's somewhat analogous to the situation we remember around here when we had all the hail-damaged cars. And you could take the hail-damaged bumps out of those cars, but to do so and not tell the potential buyers was recognized as being fraudulent. There's one other matter that I really want to address in the opening argument, and that is the Wise's third amended original answer. They argue that the, and I have provided copies to you, that somehow they pleaded matters that I think the record will reflect that they haven't pleaded. If you will compare the pleading that is before you, you will find that they really didn't plead, raise the defense that they've asserted, and I think that that speaks for itself.
What are you talking about?
Well, I gave up my copy because it didn't have enough, Judge. But the they pleaded. Now look at your copy.
You're talking about estoppel or what?
Yes. Well, on page 2, paragraph 3, they affirmatively asserted that their rights pursuant to chapters 32 and 33 with regard to contribution. The point of that was that we take the position that they waived, that they failed to raise that issue in the trial court, and they're asserting that they did. And in their brief, the Wise asserts that paragraph and omits the first line, the first two lines, actually. And I think that absolutely demonstrates their argument. That and I believe that they have, in fact, failed to plead or prove that affirmative defense.
Are we talking about that they're due to their settlement with renders them entitled to the settlement credit?
Yes,
either 1.9 or 2 points? Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And if the court has any questions.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mike Choike, and along with my co-counsel Chris Forbes and Nick Nicholas, we are pleased to be here on behalf of Wise Electric Cooperative. I want to start off my argument by discussing the issue that we presented to the court this morning. We have presented two, we believe, equally compelling reasons why the court should reverse and render a take-nothing judgment in this case, and both of our arguments derive from the same basic premise, which is that a plaintiff cannot and should not recover twice for the same injury. As y'all are aware of from the briefs, Travelers Insurance Company was a first-party insurance company that American Hat had coverage for the business damages in this case. They entered into, under the insurance policy, an appraisal proceeding. At which point it was ultimately an award was issued, and Travelers, it is undisputed, Travelers paid approximately $2.6 million to American Hat as payment for their lost business inventory and for their lost business expenses. Subsequent to that, Travelers intervened in the lawsuit, filed a petition specifically alleging that they had an equitable and contractual subrogation right to the, I believe the precise amount was about $2.576 million. It's set forth in the pleading by Travelers, where they claimed that they had a right, a subrogation right to that amount. Wise Electric ultimately settled with Travelers, paid them approximately $1.9 million, and that is undisputed evidence in the record that they paid that amount as settlement for those claims. And as a result of that settlement, they also acquired Travelers' entire priority claim interest in the amount that they had paid, that subrogation right that Travelers had as a result of their payment under the insurance policy. So by both tokens, as a result of the jury finding in this case, which was awarding for lost business inventory and for past lost profits, the total award was about $365,000, which is dwarfed by both the payment that Travelers made to American Hat, which Wise Electric now owns the subrogation right to collect that payment. In addition, Travelers has a right by virtue of, Wise Electric has a right by virtue of their settlement with Travelers. And under the Drylex case, the Texas Supreme Court, which we cited to you all, under the statute, under Chapter 33, both Travelers and American Hat are to be considered one claimant for purposes of a settlement credit. And under 33012B, the defendant, Wise Electric, is entitled to a credit for the payment of all settlement monies paid to the claimant, which in this case is both Travelers and American Hat. So by virtue of that $1.9 million payment, which dwarfs the award that was found by the jury, we're entitled to a complete credit under 33012B.
Well, there's something that doesn't pass the smell test here. Standing in the shoes of Travelers, you want the largest recovery by American Hat possible to get your money back. Standing in the shoes of Wise Electric, you don't want any recovery at all. So you're... Isn't there something a little unusual about that?
Well, of course, Your Honor, at trial, what we're trying to do is we're trying to minimize the amount of damages that are awarded because we only have an interest up to $2.6 million. So if it's beyond $2.6 million, we don't get a credit for that.
Travelers, standing in the shoes of Travelers, you want a $2.6 million recovery. Standing in the shoes of Wise Electric, you want a zero recovery.
Well, we want up to what we get is whatever they recover from Wise Electric. We get up to $2.6 million. So if it's under $2.6 million, that's fine because it ends up being a take-nothing judgment and we just made a bad settlement. But if it's above $2.6 million, then yes, we're still entitled to that credit. And we get a credit for that amount that we paid as a result of both the subrogation right, which we acquired from Travelers, and as a result of our $1.9 million settlement. So in this case, it doesn't matter which way you go at it because both of them dwarf the amount of damages that were actually awarded by the jury. And so in both instances, we're entitled to the full entitlement to that credit.
It also seems to me that you're making a contradictory argument saying that the damages are not the same for the purposes of the appraisal procedure and the purposes of the trial in the context of the collateral estoppel argument, but that the damages are the same in your appellant's brief for purposes of the $95,000 awarded by the jury.
Well, what we actually argued, Your Honor, is that the plaintiffs failed to establish that they were the same for purposes of the court's discretion, and it is an abuse of discretion as to whether or not the court applies offensive collateral estoppel. One of the elements, of course, is that it has to be the same issue is litigated both in the first judgment and in the second judgment. Put aside the issue about whether or not this was even litigated. It was an appraisal proceeding. There was no actual litigation took place. And putting aside the privity issue, which, of course, we argue that we were never involved in that proceeding. We were not in privity with Travelers with respect to that proceeding or anything. But the issue that you're raising is whether or not they've established, as part of establishing their right to collateral estoppel, whether or not the facts that were litigated in the prior proceeding were the same as the facts that were litigated in the subsequent proceeding. Our position is they didn't establish that, and so therefore they're not entitled to collateral estoppel. Now, we do argue...
Then how can you come forward and say the damages are the same for purposes of application of the double recovery rule?
Because we believe that they are. They are the same damages. Our point there is just as part of what they have to prove, they have to establish, they have to plead that, and they have to prove that, and they didn't put on any evidence about that. But the fact is, the damages are the same. It's damages for the loss of the inventory, and it's the damages for the loss of business expenses. And there was testimony at trial from Mr. McBay, who was a witness presented by Wise, that essentially these lost business expenses that he testified to are the same as lost profits. It's the net business income that is recovered over a period of time. And Mr. McBay testified that there was a period of 3 months during which the business was shut down, and then they got up and running again. And he said, well, that should be the limit to what should be awarded for lost profits. And the jury ultimately concluded they awarded past lost profits, but they didn't award any future lost profits. And so the jury, as was its right to do, considered the evidence, and they considered both sides' evidence that was presented, and they ultimately determined that there were only lost past profits, and there were not any lost future profits. I want to address the second point, which has to do with that award of lost profits that we've raised. And of course, if the court agrees that we're entitled to the settlement credit, or we're entitled to the a credit as a result of the subrogation right, then that eliminates this case, and it needs to be rendered a take-nothing judgment. But in addition, we raised the point having to do with the lost profits calculation presented by the plaintiff's expert, Dr. Shipp. He did not base that on any of the objective facts and data regarding American Hat's past profits. In fact, the evidence showed that this was a new business. He testified, Dr. Shipp specifically testified, that they did not have a history of profitability up to this point. The records show that over the past 9 months, I believe it was about six of the 9 months, they had actually shown a loss rather than a profit. Their entire basis for their lost profits calculation is purely the speculative testimony, which Dr. Shipp said was based entirely on his discussions with Mr. Maddox, the president and owner of American Hat, and his belief that, well, they were reaching a break-even point. Well, the fact that he believes they're reaching a break-even point, and the fact that their president believes that the company is turning a corner and is going to start making money, is not a basis for a lost profits calculation under the Supreme Court's guidance in the Holt-Atherton case. And therefore, we believe that the court should reject, assuming it doesn't knock out all the damages as a result of the settlement credit or the subrogation right that we have, that the court should knock out, at a minimum, knock out the lost profits calculation. I want to turn very quickly to the plaintiff's argument, American Hat's argument with respect to their remand point. And I have no doubt that American Hat would be delighted to have this case remanded, given the fact that the jury didn't believe their witness's testimony with regard to the valuation of the damages. And they'd like to take a second bite at that apple. But they haven't shown any basis for this court to do so.
Well, let's talk about 180,000 hats at 41 cents apiece. How is that possible when the testimony was that they were from whatever it was, $1.80 to something? How is that possible?
2 points on that, Your Honor. Number one is that all of the evidence that was presented by American Hat in this case had to do with replacement value. They did not put forth any evidence as to the market value of these hats either immediately before or immediately after the accident. The only evidence to that extent was Mr. Maddox's testimony that American Hat provided to the Monte County tax assessors a valuation of $200,000 for January 1, 2005, and then the valuation after that of $105,000. In addition to that,
of course, we don't know how that relates to the time of the fire.
We do know it's the only evidence out there, Your Honor.
That may be no evidence at all.
We do know that there is evidence of the market value immediately before and immediately after the fire, or at least before and after the fire. So we do have that evidence out there.
On the other side, you would be up here arguing that that's no evidence because it's 10 or 11 months before the fire, and that's no evidence of what was there at or near the time of the fire.
Well, I don't believe they presented a no-evidence issue, Your Honor. I believe they're arguing it's against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence. And what I will say as to that, again, Your Honor, and going back to your point about the price per hat,
about where I was about to ask you to go back to, so go ahead.
Our evidence in this case, and of course on a factual sufficiency, the court is not allowed to just limit itself to the evidence that the American Hat presents. It's the record evidence as a whole. We presented evidence, Your Honor, that not all of the hats were damaged. In fact, our expert testified that based on the stacking of the hats were stacked in boxes where they actually were 12 to a stack. So he said, well, really only the top hat is the only one that's been damaged. The rest of them are fine and are not damaged as a result of the smoke. So that takes us down to about 1/12 of the total number of hats with respect to the damages. And, of course, the jury could believe that testimony or disbelieve the plaintiff's testimony as well. In addition, there was testimony that we presented that the hats could be cleaned, that they could be that they could essentially be refurbished and therefore resold. They could have a market value of some. Now, it's true that they say, well, everybody said, well, we don't know what the market value is of these hats, which, of course, is their burden to put forth evidence as to what the market value was both before and after the accident, before and after the fire, which they failed to do. They didn't put forth any evidence as to market value.
Seriously, I mean, how could they put forth evidence of what the value of a smoke-damaged or smoky-smelling hat was? I mean, what evidence would they put on?
You could test it. I, as a matter of common sense, Your Honor, I cannot believe that if you have a $650 hat that has some smoke damage to it, even if you accept the plaintiff's argument that that hat cannot be cleaned and cannot be cured of that smoke damage, that that hat doesn't still have some value, that somebody out there wouldn't be willing to pay money, some amount of money, probably not the full amount of money, but some amount of money to purchase that hat.
But that's your burden to prove.
I don't believe it is, Your
well,
Honor.
If
I believe it's,
if they have
I
an expert that comes up and says it has no value because we can't sell it because it's smoky, and you want to refute that, it's your burden to refute that.
Your Honor, there isn't any evidence that says that there is no value to this hat. The evidence that they put forth is saying that there was that nobody can figure out what the value
okay.
is
well,
of
you
the
help
hats.
Me here. Here's what I'm really struggling with. I'm really struggling that the inventory value before and after the fire is established by a tax amount that was estimated a year or several months, if it's on January the 1st, before the fire, and that establishes a before figure, as opposed to the date of the fire many months later, which there was testimony about what the value was. I mean, I'm struggling that that is any evidence at all, a taxable value established in September or January before the fire.
And, Your Honor, there is the testimony in this case is that Mr. Maddox purchased American Hat Company
right,
inventory
right.
in 2003 from Conroe,
right, moved it to
all
Bowie.
Of the inventory down to Bowie, Texas, including he bought these containers and stacked all this inventory into the containers. So that's his inventory. He values that inventory as of January 1, 2005 under the tax appraisal.
As of,
there,
we don't know exactly
as of,
when.
As of January right. 1, 2005, which
right.
is what the records show. There is no evidence in this case, Your Honor, none whatsoever, that they added to that inventory in any significant amount. And so, therefore, that testimony as of January, or that evidence as of January 1, 2005, is the only evidence, and there's no reason you can't push that forward. The jury could have believed that that evidence goes forward to November of 2005, the date of the fire. The jury was free. It was completely within its province to believe or disbelieve any of the testimony that was provided by Mr. Maddox as to what he believed the valuation was of the hats. They could have discounted that testimony to any extent that they wanted to, and that therefore there's no basis for this court to reverse the amount of the damages for the lost inventory based on a great weight and on a factual sufficiency challenge.
What's your explanation of the umpire's award?
I don't have a good explanation.
He's supposed
for
to be fair, right? He's not a pro insurance, not a pro insured. He's down the middle.
And Your Honor, the problem is we have nothing in the record to tell us what the umpire based that award on. Travelers said it was one amount. American Hat said it was the other amount. The umpire came in and said it was this other amount, and that's the basis for the award. What I will point out, of course, is that Travelers had a $2 million limit on its business inventory. So the fact that the umpire said, okay, the damage to the inventory is $8.6 million, well, you know, whether it's $2 million and $1 or whether it's $25 million, Travelers doesn't care at that point because they know they're limited to their $2 million. As to why the umpire came with that award, there's nothing in the record to show us. And that's part of the reason why their collateral estoppel argument has to fail, because we don't know whether it was fairly and fully litigated. I don't believe it was even litigated at all because it was just an appraisal proceeding. And so that argument that they have, which they really haven't pushed in this oral argument here, I don't believe is a proper basis for the court to reverse that case either. The the bottom line on this is that Wise Electric has paid $1.9 million to a party for which they are also being asked to pay damages for the same damages for which they paid that settlement credit. That's a double recovery that the plaintiffs are trying to achieve in this case, which is not proper, and is on that basis the court should reverse and render. And that will dispose of the case in its entirety. The arguments that they have put forth with respect to both collateral estoppel and with respect to their great weight and preponderance points, the jury was free to disregard or disbelieve any portion of the American Hats testimony in this case. They have not established that there's any reason why that award that the jury gave with respect to the lost inventory and with respect to lost profits was demonstrated bias or shocks the conscience in any way. There is no reason to believe that the jury based its opinion on anything other than the evidence that was before it. And for that reason, the court should reverse this case and should render a take-nothing judgment in favor of Wise Electric.
I don't recall. Was the umpire's award before the jury? I would think not.
The umpire's award was not ultimately before the jury. And okay. And let me that brings up one other question, one other issue that I wanted to address very briefly, which has to do with the pleading waiver issue that American Hat has raised here, and that is that the settlement credit and the credit based on the subrogation right. Neither of those are issues for the jury. Those are issues for the judge, trial judge, to decide after the verdict whether or not to apply a settlement. This is not a case where we're trying to claim that the damages should have been reduced because of some payment we made, and so therefore that was evidence that had to be presented in front of the jury. So therefore, there's no requirement that it had to be pleaded or actually presented in front of the jury. We did present it to the, I mean, obviously they were aware of Travelers' claim of a subrogation right. We did clearly plead our right to contribution or a settlement credit based on our payments to Travelers, so there's no dispute about that. We presented this issue to the trial court in our motion for judgment on the verdict after the verdict was rendered, so there's no evidence that there was any surprise or any issue that would make it inequitable to present this issue before the judge. And so on that basis, Your Honor, we would ask for
your
reversal.
Your simplest lead dog argument is that you purchased the subrogation rights of the insurance carrier and therefore you were entitled to the first monies that were recovered up to the amount of, theoretically, $2.6 million.
Right. I think that goes hand-in-hand with our settlement credit right. argument under 33012, well, which is by virtue of our 1.9 settlement credit, we're entitled to a statutory settlement credit. But both of them derive from the same place, which is that the plaintiff is recovering basically our money twice.
Okay. The trial judge initially denied the admissibility of 51 through 56. What happened to change his opinion? Any new evidence? Anything come in?
Your Honor, there was additional testimony which was presented through Mr. Maddox about the basis for those numbers. And there is testimony in the record from Mr. Maddox where he specifically testifies that those numbers were provided to the taxing authorities by American Hat. And I would refer the court to its I don't have the volume. It's volume. Volume 7 of the reporter's record, beginning on page 85 through page 92, is where the discussion takes place, in which Mr. Maddox testifies as to the fact that this information, the $200,000 figure for 2005, was provided to the taxing authorities by American Hat. In addition, the fact that he paid taxes on those amounts, we believe, creates an admission by silence, by essentially agreeing with the fact that the taxing authority said, here's how we're evaluating your property, and then he pays taxes on that amount. That's an admission that in itself is an admission that that amount is correct.
So if the Tarrant Appraisal District came out and assessed your house at $250,000 and you thought it was really worth $450,000, you'd run down to them and tell them, oh, no, it's really $450,000. Let's raise that up. That's not what you're saying, is it?
Your Honor, if I wanted to come back into a court of law and argue that after my house was destroyed, it was really worth $450,000. But
I'd go hire some experts.
I didn't go tell. But I didn't go tell the taxing authorities that it was really worth $250,000. I sure would expect the other side to come back and put forth that evidence in front of a jury, and I wouldn't be shocked if the jury didn't believe me.
Now, did he provide the 250 figure, or did the taxing 200, or did the taxing authority assess 200, and he remained silent as to it?
The evidence in this case, Your Honor, is that American Hat provided that information, right, the $200,000, to the taxing authority, and that's
okay.
Mr. Maddox's testimony.
That's what I thought. All right.
Thank you. I'll ask our deputy clerk to add a minute to Mr. Ferris's time since we went significantly.
Thank you, Your Honor. Wise's set-off defense was an affirmative defense. They didn't plead it. They didn't prove it. After the trial, in fact, the record will support this. You can look at the clerk's record. I discovered there was a sealed envelope with something in it and wanted to see what was behind door one, opened it, and found the document that shows the settlement where Travelers sold its claim, its first dollar claim, to Wise Electric. And they didn't plead it, and they didn't prove it. I don't think that, it is an affirmative defense under Rule 94, I don't think it's available to them.
That's kind of a set-off. We're talking about they purchased a subrogation right. I mean, whether they get it or the insurance company got it, how are they not entitled to this award to the extent that it doesn't exceed either $1.9 or $2.6 million, depending on how this all falls out?
Well, I still think they have to plead it and prove it, Your Honor. I think the rule is clear. I don't think it's a rather harsh rule, but I think
the insurance company intervened, it's in subrogation, right? No question it's entitled to it.
If the insurance company had intervened, it would have been
entitled. Did they intervene?
They didn't.
But they have
I'm sorry, I misspoke. They did.
I thought
they did intervene.
Court would just send the money that you recovered to the insurance company. And then it might be between them and the insurance company as to who gets it. But I don't understand how they aren't entitled to the $200,000.
If Travelers Insurance had remained in it, Your Honor, they'd be in here arguing with me today saying this verdict is a bogus verdict, that $95,000 doesn't cover the loss of 490,000 hats.
I'm struggling with why the insurance company isn't entitled to the money up to 1.9, 2.6, and then it's a dispute between them and the insurance company as to who actually owns it.
I will concede that point, Your Honor.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
With regard to there being any testimony as to any residual value, American Hat Company's competitor testified the only thing you could do with those hats was dig a hole and bury them.
What about his statement that there was testimony from his expert that only the top hat of the 12 would have been damaged, and so that guts 11ths, 12ths of your damages? I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying he said that testimony was in there, and I'm asking you, do you agree?
Your Honor, I have read the entire record, and it's probably in there. I just honestly do not recall. I don't doubt that it's in there. And another point is that when American Hat bought, what they did was they bought a company that went bankrupt, and they moved the inventory. What they had was hat bodies, which certainly were valuable. But by the time the fire occurred more than a year later after they'd made this purchase, a lot of those hat bodies had been turned into hats. And there was testimony about there was having a value that ran into seven
figures.
What is a
hat body? Is it just a flat piece of felt?
They acquire them either from China, the straw hats are acquired from, it's just a hat body. And they shape it, they finish it. If it's a straw hat, they actually have to sort of treat it so that it has a permanence in its shape. And so there's quite a bit of work that goes into making a hat body into a hat. The testimony that the felt hats came from Portugal, as I recall, most of them, and the straw hats came from China.
Do you agree that there's no evidence that the inventory increased in size from the 2005 tax record through the November 2005 fire?
It didn't increase in volume. There is an increase in there's no testimony that I recall of that. There is that testimony that they appreciated in value because of the work that was done on the hat box.
Well, let's flip this around. You're complaining about 41 cents a hat. Okay, right. And I'm hearing that argument. But how can it go from $200,000 to $12 million with no increase in inventory? All that's happening is you're working on the hats themselves.
Your Honor,
how's that possible?
Yeah, if this had been a case where they, if the jury had awarded $5 or $10 a hat, we wouldn't be up here. There's testimony that some of those hats were worth as much as $137. And that was the wholesale price. And, of course, that's what we're trying to recover.
I know, but you're going from 200 to 12 million with no increase in inventory, just an increase in shaping the hat and making the hat out of the body.
Shaping the hat, putting in the ribbon. There's a lot of work in these hats. They have a lot of. They had several employees. I think the testimony was they started with like 30 and ended up with like 90 something. And I don't recall the exact numbers.
But I guess what I'm saying is, on your own numbers, the what was there was maybe a dollar a piece. And some of them went from $1 to $126. I mean,
well, I think
I'm
the
struggling
testimony
with
was that we're from $5, $4 or $5 a piece to up. That was an unfinished straw hat body up to a completed hat, and a felt hat's worth more than a straw hat.
Okay.
So, the court should hold that the trial court erred in admitting the tax exhibits and that the plaintiff was harmed by their admission. And also, I believe the court I would refer the court to the court, this court's opinion as a demonstration of how you've done this in Kitchen versus Frischer, 818 Southwest, 181, excuse me, Southwest 3rd at 467. It's an opinion by you, Justice McCoy. In that case, you've made a very graphic description of how the evidence was against the great weight, rather the verdict was against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence. I've got a yellow light, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I think it's a good comparison to this case. The court should conclude that after weighing all of the evidence on the inventory value, the jury verdict was clearly against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence, and the jury calculation was supported solely by these tax records, which were suspect, as we have discussed earlier, and by the Wise's closing argument, doing the arithmetic for the jury, giving the same calculation that the jury ultimately accepted.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. Your case is submitted. You are excused, and we will call the next case.